Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? I know that you are, and I know you know that means it's time once again for Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and hey, Nation, make sure you head on over to chefdrmike.com, and you want to subscribe to the newsletter. Why? Because it's going to give you all the background, all the information, some special insights. It comes out before each of our radio shows each week. And I've got a special surprise for you in there. I have been working like a dog for you out there, sourcing up some great companies, some great partners out there, and securing for you some extra valuable discounts, but you're only going to get them if you subscribe to the newsletter. So head on over there now. That's chefdrmike.com. And one of the things that you'll be able to get a discount on are some supplements. And one of the big hot supplements going on today is curcumin. And I am absolutely delighted, really humbled to have Professor Goel with us today. He is Director of Epigenetics, Cancer Prevention, and Cancer Genomics at Baylor University Medical Center. He's spent over 20 years researching cancer, has been the lead author, contributor in over 150 scientific articles that have been published in peer-reviewed international journals. I have a handful of those to my credit. I know how hard it is to do. What this means to translate for you, the guy is super duper super smart. He is one of the world's leading researchers on curcumin and colon cancer, and he's currently investigating the prevention of gastrointestinal cancers using both integrative and alternate approaches, including products like curcumin. So, Professor Goel, so glad you could be on the program today. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a pleasure.
So first, you know, a lot of our folks who are listening have a culinary background. They have a health background. So they've probably heard about turmeric and curcumin. Could you explain for us a little bit about, you know, what they are and how they're related?
Absolutely. So I think that's a very important question because people sometimes use these words interchangeably, and which is not correct. So turmeric is a spice. So turmeric is a spice which is predominantly present used in Southeast Asia, which would be India and certain other parts of South Asian continent. So it's a yellow powder, which is used in Indian cooking and many other culinary styles in that part of the world. So turmeric is simply a spice we use for cooking, and curcumin is actually the active principle or active constituent or active natural medicine which is present in turmeric. So curcumin is only anywhere about 2-4% of total turmeric content. So turmeric is used for cooking, and curcumin is the natural medicine which is present in there. So depending upon what the purpose people are trying to achieve, if they're using a spice to make their food colorful and tastier, then you would use turmeric. But if you're trying to derive any sort of health benefits, any sort of medicinal benefits, then the selection should be curcumin, which you can easily find as capsules and pills in many health food stores.
And so when people are looking at using the supplement, the curcumin, for the health benefits, if you were to use turmeric in cooking on a regular basis, and things like that, can you actually ingest enough of the curcumin to get health benefits, or is are the only health benefits seen when you take the supplementation?
Yes, so that's a very important question. So the answer is you can use turmeric, but since the health benefits are being they're coming from only curcumin, and the curcumin content is very, very small in turmeric, you will have to ingest a lot of turmeric on a regular basis to see any health benefits, which makes it very, very hard. So having said that, people in India, for example, they use turmeric for virtually every meal. So if they're eating 3 meals a day, you'll notice that most Indian dishes are yellow in color, and that yellow color comes from turmeric. And so these people are using turmeric on a regular basis every single meal for pretty much their entire lifespan. So in populations like that, probably using turmeric is sufficient because they always have some level of residual curcumin in their body because they're eating so much of it. But talking about using turmeric in Western countries like U.S., we're living here. So unless you plan to use, you know, 30, 40, 50 grams of turmeric every single day, which is a lot of turmeric, and it is almost impractical to consume that much, so you're not going to see any significant health benefits. Because if you're using a few grams of turmeric every day, so which equates only a few milligrams of curcumin every single day, so that won't be enough. So the answer is, yes, turmeric is good. It gives you health benefits, but you have to ingest a lot of large volume of it and on a very regular basis. But a easy and more practical way in people who don't use turmeric every single day in their food would be to take curcumin supplements.
And one of the things that I came across, actually when I was researching from a culinary perspective in using turmeric, was the fact that I often saw that the traditional recipes incorporated it almost always with freshly ground pepper. And my understanding mm-hmm. is that that has a positive effect in the bioavailability of the curcumin. Is that correct?
Say it again, please.
That the some of the aspects, I think the piperine from the fresh ground pepper helps increase the bioavailability, helps prevent the rapid breakdown of curcumin when we do it. And it fascinated me that somehow, you know, probably thousands of years ago, folks were able to figure out that that is a powerful, you know, maybe taste combination, but a powerful health combination as well. Mm-hmm. So is that, you know, sort of just a old wives' tale, or is there some scientific, you know, oomph to back that?
Absolutely. So I think that's a very important question. So you raise a very important thing that as good curcumin is, one of the challenges, one of the limitations of curcumin is that it is poorly absorbed in our body once we ingest it. So what that means is once we ingest it orally, whether as a food or as a supplement, much of it gets break down and it does not make it to the bloodstream, so it's not absorbed. So there are many different strategies people have used over the years to enhance its bioabsorption or bioavailability. So one of the methodologies which you just referred, that if you combine curcumin with black pepper or piperine, it can possibly enhance its absorption. And as a scientist, I can tell you that there's only been one single study, as much as I know, which was published about 20 years ago, where this evidence was provided that combination of black pepper and curcumin can possibly increase its bioavailability. And that study was fine. And that may be true, but there are not too many other studies which have validated that claim. So in science, I think that's always, you have to be careful how you interpret and how you read these studies, because if there is a single study, there got to be more evidence than out there, because we don't fully understand what the mechanism is. But I do not want to deny the fact, maybe that was true, but I have not seen any other evidence. The other challenge is when you combine black pepper with curcumin for the most part is very safe on its own, and also people who are taking other prescription drugs, you know, maybe in routine drugs like aspirin, or they're taking some other drugs for their, you know, health, heart health or brain health or anything else. So there's a lot of science out there with curcumin that for the most part, curcumin has no negative interactions with any of the prescription drugs we routinely take. However, there is some concern that if you're going to use black pepper to enhance absorption of curcumin, black pepper, there is evidence that it can negatively interact with a lot of prescription drugs. So one has to be careful that on one hand, you're trying to increase the benefits of curcumin by combining it with black pepper because it can increase its bioavailability. But at the same time, you run the risk that by taking black pepper along with curcumin, you run the risk that if you're taking other drugs, there may be some negative interaction. So having said all of this, I think there is a lot of reasons to believe that you can enhance absorption of curcumin by using other approaches, such as combining curcumin with oils, combining curcumin with other fats, and that's where there's a lot of excitement, there's a lot of research, there's a lot of science around there that when you use curcumin with fats or with foods, you have the ability to enhance its absorption.
And one of the things, obviously a very intensive area of investigation for you, is the potential benefits of this compound against types of cancers, particularly gastrointestinal cancers. So could you share with us a little bit of your insight into that, maybe some mechanisms? And I'm also curious as to, you know, how did you discover this relationship? Because it's certainly not something, one might, sort of just come to, by looking at a plate of food and saying, wow, I bet that works really good against, colon cancer. So what, what gave you that insight?
Absolutely. So I think that's a very important question. And that was a very important time frame in my life when I decided that I'm going to start using or start studying scientifically the benefits of some of these natural herbs and spices and other botanicals. And this started with my research looking at global cancer incidence. So I was very interested in studying cancer. That was always my passion. And each year, CDC and many other government organizations, they put together global incidence of different cancers across worldwide, So they're looking at, right. And I've been watching this data for the last 20 plus years, and that was then when I decided. So when I look at these colors, when I look at the global incidence of colon cancer, breast cancer, lung cancer, when you look at any of these cancers, the cumulative burden of death and disease incidence from cancer is U.S. has always been number one or number two in the world. So we have one of the highest burden of cancer on the planet. And this was very puzzling to me, why. And on the other hand, countries such as
I got to interrupt you because if it was puzzling to you, the mm-hmm. corollary question I have to ask is, have you ever driven by a fast food restaurant and seen the line of cars around the block?
Yep. So there is exactly your answer right there. So that's part of the reason why that is the case. Exactly. That's exactly the case. The kind of food we eat here, the high caloric intake, high fats, high sugars, processed food, all of those are the reasons simply why we have the highest disease burden. I just mentioned about cancer, but actually others have done these studies where you can look at overall disease burden is we are living in a nation where we have one of the highest disease burden overall. But going back to the cancer incidence, so cancer is one of the most common diseases in this part of the country. But on the flip side is when you look at countries like India, where you have a huge population of close to 1.3 billion people, India is one of those nations where there has always been one of the lowest incidences of cancer, which was very troubling to me. I said, why would that be the case? Because in India, people, we don't have, there's still literacy is a problem. Poverty is still a problem. People can't breathe clean air. But in spite of all of that, I was wondering how come they are protected against cancer. And then I began to systematically interrogate everything, and it came to my mind that there's got to be something about food, what we ingest. And that's part of the reason why different diseases are different proportions, are different frequencies in different parts of the world. It is not the genetics. As a human race, we are all very similar. We may look a little different, but as human species, we are all very similar. So what makes us different? The kind of things we eat, the kind of air we breathe, the kind of environments we live every single day. And that's where curcumin came into picture, because when you look at Indian food, one of the most common ingredient in there is curcumin. Every single meal has curcumin and turmeric in there. So that's how I began to look at turmeric. And then as of today, there are more than 10,000 studies published on turmeric. There's not any herb, any modern drug, any prescription drug, which has even few thousand or few hundred studies. This is the only natural medicine out there, natural plant out there, for which we have more than 10,000 peer-reviewed scientific studies.
And India is the source of the curcumin. Is it the turmeric in the diet? And so is that something that no matter which region of India you might go to, that spice is going to be incorporated in one fashion or another?
Absolutely. So turmeric is indigenous to Indian culture, Indian food, and yes, I mean, pretty much every Indian, no matter what part of the country you go, turmeric is still integral to every cuisine, every part of the world. Now, having said that, I mean, there could be small variations in the curcumin content in turmeric. I told you the range, the curcumin content in turmeric varies anywhere between 2 to 4%, and this variation between 2 to 4 is essentially because depending upon what kind of climate, what kind of soil, what kind of weather, what kind of species of turmeric plant is grown. So the curcumin content may vary, but as turmeric, yes, it is used commonly throughout the country.
And how do you have any insights? Have all this research with all these publications and papers, do we have any insight into how this is working? Any idea on the mechanisms?
Yes. So I don't want to get too deep into that because that's a topic I love, so I don't want to bore your audience with too many detailed mechanisms. But the point is, the point in frame here situation is that most chronic diseases, including cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes, Parkinson's, you can think of any chronic illness, and I work in the field of cancer, I can tell you that cancer is not driven by a single gene. A single gene may be a trigger for a normal cell to become cancerous, but on its own, it's never a single gene, single mechanism, single pathway. So there are hundreds and hundreds. So in a normal human body, we have about, in a normal human cell, we have about 22,000, anywhere between 20 to 22,000 genes. And all of these genes have very defined functions, what they're supposed to do. And there is a subset of a few hundred of genes which control cell growth. So we want these genes to be always be very active so that they grow, they control the cell growth. By that, what I mean is that every single cell in our body comes with a built-in time clock. So every cell in our body gets renewed. Old cells die, the new cells replace them every few days. And if that process does not function as effectively as the day we are born, then what happens is we have accumulation of new cells and the old cells are not dying. So cancer is nothing else but an abnormal growth of normal cells. So what that means is the normal cells are not dying, they continue to pile up, and then you have a big mass of cells, which is cancer. So, and why that happens? Because some of the genes which are supposed to give the signal to the cells, time to die, they stop functioning. And one of the major understanding we have is that curcumin, when people ingest curcumin, curcumin keeps our genome happy. You know, it keeps over all the genes happy, keeps all these pathways functioning, and when that is happening, it helps allow prevent cancer. Patients who already have cancer, when they take curcumin, it helps prevent the growth of cancers further on. It prevents metastases. It prevents spread of cancer, so forth. So it works through many, many different pathways, and one of the common thread is it keeps our gene functioning the way they're supposed to.
And have you seen it be, in your research, have you seen it be particularly effective in certain kinds of tumors, for example, gastrointestinal tumors, or even more specific, for example, colon yes, cancers and things like that?
Yes. So there's a lot of evidence that I've yet to find any type of cancer for which curcumin has not been studied. So that speaks volumes. Why it is studied in every cancer? The reason simply being, it has shown promise, it works in every single cancer. Now, within all different cancer types, are there certain cancer where it works better than others? The answer is yes. And one of them being colorectal cancer or cancers of the colon, the reason is, I just told you that curcumin, one of the limitations of curcumin is, it is poorly absorbed in our bloodstream mm-hmm. once we ingest it. But that works wonderful when it comes to colon cancer. What that means is, once we ingest curcumin, once we ingest curcumin, even if it doesn't get absorbed, it stays in our colon for long periods of time. Some amount of it still gets absorbed in the bloodstream, but the remainder of it stays in the colon for long periods of time. So what that does is, and we have published many studies, others have done the same work, that now you're getting dual benefit from curcumin. So you're getting a local effect because curcumin is in contact with the colonic lumen and colonic cells, and the second part being that the amount of curcumin which is absorbed in bloodstream, it helps systemically. So in the context of colon cancer, in the context of inflammatory bowel disease, any of these diseases within the gut, curcumin has shown a lot more bigger effect compared to other cancers where it is somewhat, you have to absorb it systemically only to see the effect.
And this brings up an intense area of interest for me, and I often write about this, and it makes me wonder, do you have any research on whether the curcumin is affecting the human gut microbiome?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have another study, new study coming out where we have shown that, but others have shown anecdotal evidence that Yes. So we are all learning that right now one of the hottest areas in science is gut microbiome, because we are learning that a lot of the disease we get these days, especially within the GI tract, within the gastrointestinal tract, is somehow impacted by the bacteria which are living in our gut. So yes, we have a new study coming out where we are showing that curcumin actually promotes the growth of healthy bacteria, because we have a combination of bacteria. Some are good, some are not so good. So what we have shown is that curcumin actually somehow have this uncanny ability to selectively promote the growth of healthy bacteria while it gets rid of all the infectious or unhealthy bacteria. And when it does that, that in turn controls the behavior of different genes, controls the gut microenvironment, and so forth. Yes.
Well, that is actually fascinating. I'm going to push a little bit, and I know the paper's not out yet, but if you could share a little bit, I'm just myself very curious, what types of species are you seeing an increase in? Because there certainly are, as you said, when we look at folks that are healthy versus people who have inflammatory bowel disease or people mm-hmm. who have coronary artery disease, we start to see, some different types of bacteria in terms of the families, the bacterioides, the Firmicutes, etc. So mm-hmm. what do you see promoted with the curcumin?
So I mean, I cannot get into all the details. So what I'm trying to say is that curcumin has the ability. So we, a lot of these patients take probiotics. So we know that mm-hmm. some of these probiotics are essentially we take because they colonize within our guts to promote healthy bacteria. So all of these species, which essentially we take in probiotics, we don't need to be taking that much probiotics if we can maintain the natural frequency and the natural habitat of these bacteria within our gut. So what we are showing here is actually we have done a direct comparison that we don't need probiotic supplementation if we can take curcumin, which can in turn preserve these healthy bacteria within our guts.
And this sounds very helpful, as you said, having the right bacteria in terms of a preventative type thing. What about for folks that have had, for example, a colon cancer or are potentially undergoing chemotherapy, radiation therapy, other things? Because sometimes, for example, one of the only negative studies I've ever come across for the taking of probiotics showed a negative effect when folks were suffering with acute pancreatitis, an acute mm-hmm. inflammation mm-hmm. involving the pancreas. And in that case, in that particular study, the probiotic combination they were taking was not helpful and, in fact, led to worse outcomes. A small study nonetheless, I do want to mention that. But it does raise to me an important caveat that, that things sometimes are not without an downside, even if we haven't seen it yet. So do we have any insight into folks who, have active inflammation, active cancer, or are receiving active therapies? Is this type of therapy we're talking about with curcumin, is it safe?
Absolutely. So we have done a lot of studies, and we have published a lot of studies. And I believe that I think the best bang for the buck is, a lot of people take the word prevention very cynically. They don't know. They say, how do we know if I take XYZ compound, how would I ever know that I prevented something? But there's tons and tons of epidemiological evidence out there that people living in India, they're like, nobody have yet died because of curcumin poisoning. So, they all eat it every single day. So we know that there's a lot of evidence that it works good in a preventative setting. But we have published many, many studies. We have published close to 30 studies from my group alone where we have given curcumin to patients who already have one or the other kind of cancer, for example, colon cancer, pancreatic cancer. We have a new study coming out on pancreatic cancer. So colitis, we just published a study last week. So we have shown that patients who already have one of these cancers or some other inflammatory disease, and if they take curcumin along with it, actually it makes them feel much better. So in other words, when it comes to cancer patients, most of the cancer patients actually do not die of the cancer. Most of the cancer patients die from the toxicity and the side effect of these chemotherapies. And what curcumin does is, and we are doing clinical trials also, we have published other studies that when you give curcumin along with chemotherapy, curcumin makes chemotherapy look better. So curcumin can actually reduce the toxicity of chemotherapy and provide these patients a better quality of life. one of the challenges with chemotherapies are that they kill the cells. There's no problem. They're very good at killing cells. But they're not only killing your cancer cells, but the chemotherapies killed your normal cells also. And that's where the toxicity comes from. And what we have shown is when you combine chemotherapy with curcumin, actually curcumin has the ability to protect your normal flora. It protects your normal cells. It selectively allows cancer cells to die. That's why patients who take curcumin along with their chemotherapy, they feel much better because they have reduced toxicity, more benefits.
As a physician, you know, I would say that, you know, we prefer the term chemotherapy because it sounds so much better than poison. But right. That is exactly, you know, what we're doing. Professor, thank you so much for being here. Real quick before we go, can you tell folks just quickly what dose should they be looking for on a daily basis?
So that's a very important question again, but I don't have a very good answer, but I'll tell you based on my experience and based on all the research we have done, all the science we have published. So if a person is healthy, they have no concerns, they want to consider taking curcumin as a preventative supplement. So what I suggest is they take a dose of anywhere between, you know, 300 to 700 milligrams each day. And I've calculated this dose based on an average amount of curcumin ingestion in a typical Indian meal throughout the day. So most people eat three Indian meals a day. They take about they use turmeric. They don't use curcumin. So that so the amount of curcumin content is anywhere around 400 to 500 milligrams. So that's for most people in terms of prevention. In terms of those who are trying to derive specific health benefits for their conditions, whether it's cancer or other diseases, I think a good dose would be anywhere between 1 to 2 grams of high quality, high absorption curcumin split over the day. So I strongly want to suggest that they shouldn't take curcumin all once at a time because it is not poorly absorbed. So split your dose as much as possible, maybe morning, afternoon, evening, something like that. So split your dose anywhere between 1 to 2 grams overall in a day. And then based on the effect, you can titrate it. You can go a little bit more or less. In terms of safety, it is very safe. There are clinical studies done that people who took even up to 12 grams of curcumin, virtually no side effect, no toxicity. So I think, but that doesn't mean we should all start taking 12 grams every day. So I think about 2 grams, I would say, is a decent way to start, and then you reduce or increase it as needed.
Professor, thank you so much, folks. We're delighted. A very informative talk with Professor A.J. Goel. Professor, thank you so much for being with us here today. And Nation, until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.